If only they knew. The hub for young business minds.
Yes, people, it's Ted Lawler, and welcome back to another episode of the If Only They Knew podcast. Today, we speak to Max Parker, the entrepreneur that created Matchstick Group. Max speaks about building a business from his bedroom, overcoming suicidal thoughts, working with celebrities, and so much more. So if you want to know how to change your life around, this is the podcast for you.
Wicked. So I'm Max. I'm the founder of Matchstick Group, which is an entertainment-based management agency. We look after celebrities and content creators. We actually turned one this week. So we launched on March 1st, 2021. And it's been, just the most surreal 12 months of business.
Well, yeah, happy birthday. I was going to say that. Yeah, happy birthday. I see it was a few days ago, wasn't it? So it's been quite a journey, I imagine.
Yeah, it's been insane. It's stressful. I think any business owner will tell you, especially a startup business where you've never run a company before, it's stressful. You know, it is. I've got four members of staff now, and we're growing at the most unbelievable rate with over 52 clients. But I couldn't have asked for a better. I'd rather be this stressed than not busy. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind and just remarkable.
Before we dive deeper into what you're sort of up to now, I always think it's good to sort of rewind a bit. And let's talk about who you was before all of this, before you had the agency, before you sort of discovered what you discovered now from business. Who was you before any of this happened? Was you a confident person before, or... Yeah, give us an idea of who you were.
I was confident, but I had, I guess, a false sense of confidence. You know, I suffer quite badly of mental health. And I think any mental health sufferer will tell you that there's always self-doubt in their head, and every day is naturally a struggle. So I had, I guess, a false sense of arrogance of, you know, I had to tell myself I was amazing. I wanted people to know I was amazing at my job and that I was confident, but really I wasn't. I think the entertainment industry is something where you need to have a bit about you to be successful. You can't, you know, it's such a cutthroat business. You can't, you know, be someone that has self-doubt, you know, in this industry with, you know, without knowing that, you know, I guess people think you're confident or you know what you're talking about. So for years and years, you know, I had this sort of false sense of confidence, but really it was just a facade. And then it wasn't until I set my agency up that I actually started to believe and back myself and know my capabilities. But before then, not really.
Well, how did you, or not how first, why did you get into this world? Because I worked with the ITV last week, and they were asking me about the way that certain entrepreneurs have made money in like really unique ways, and I think this is one of them, because it's not something that most people sort of look to set up, is it, from a young age? So why did you go into this world, and then following up from that, how did you get into this world?
I just think it's fascinating. I think what I love is you know, on a not even just from a nationwide scale, a global scale, there's always a fascination with celebrity culture. You know, we consume it every day, regardless of what generation you're from. You have your favorite singer or favorite movie star or favorite content creator, and for me there's always been this fascination that there's a team of people behind that person in front of the camera, and that's always been a fascination of mine. And my family were in the industry. My dad was head of promotions at a major record company. My mum was quite senior within the record industry. My brother worked for Simon Cowell at Psycho. So I've always sort of had my ear to the ground in entertainment, but mainly on the music side. And then sort of when in, I'd say 2012, 2013, I signed a content creator who was the first of his kind in the UK. And I was one of the first social media managers in the UK. And from there, it was just this fascination of online and, you know, celebrity. And I loved it. And I think, you know, when these people have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of followers, the follower doesn't really know that these people have an agent or a publicist or a TV plug or a radio plug or whatever that is. So for me, it was just this fascination with it.
But there's a lot of things like that, isn't there? Like, I think I'm quite similar to that. You see the front facing things, like you said, especially in the talent world, you see them on the TV, you see them doing certain things, but you don't realize, like you said, how much actually goes in to get them onto that TV show. There's a lot of work, isn't there? So I think if more people had more interest in that, I think it would spark so many ideas, wouldn't it? But you mentioned something there about your family being in this industry and it sort of gave you the ideas to get involved. But if I'm right, I heard you on a podcast or an interview, I think it was, where you said you were very adamant not to let them give you a leg up in that sense. You wanted to do it yourself. So you didn't sort of rely on your family members to sort of help you get into the industry. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, I think this industry is really who you know to start off with, not so much what you know. You don't need degrees to be successful in this business. So, you know, there's always that level of, you know, you need someone to help open the door for you, but once that door's open, you have to work your ass off. For me, I really didn't want to use my family connections to get into the business. So when I started off, I did 2 years unpaid internships, just because I wanted to learn and graft and hone in exactly what I wanted my craft to be. And I wanted to know all areas of the business. And I think that's where Matchstick is so successful, because I know the literary space really well. Well, we've done 3 book deals. You know, I know the social realm really well. I've won awards from YouTube for the best independent release. You know, I know theatre. I've done endless amounts of TV shows. I've developed a show and you know, that was sold into ITV. So for me, that 2 years experience is my speciality, isn't just social media. I'd like to think I'm the GP of management, because I know and have contacts in all areas of this industry. And I think that's where, you know, we have such a collective mix of talent under Matchstick. So from that side, it was really important for me that obviously I learned as much from my family as possible, and that, you know, I use them to further myself. But in the interim, it was fundamentally important to me to make sure that I was building my own name and not just being reliant on them to hand me these opportunities. So, like I say, for the first 2 years, that was intense. I worked Saturday and Sunday in Fat Face, the retailer, which financed my Monday to Friday, because I was an unpaid intern. Like, my train fare was £280 a month. So for me, it was this thing of, I was commuting into Central. I started off at a Radio Pluggers because I was fascinated with music and wanting to learn about those opportunities. And then from there, I then went to a management company at Crown Talent and then learned as much as I could from there. Then I got poached to go to the Wanted's management. And then I was there for a bit. Then I left there to go to Insanity. And then from Insanity, I then went freelance. And then ironically enough, 2 years later, my brother owned a management company and was quite impressed with what I was doing. And then I went from, you know, unpaid internships to then going and working for my brother. So I had this sort of 360 of not wanting to use my family to get a leg up, but sort of my brother coming to me going, actually, I'm impressed with what you're doing and what you know and who you know, and I want you to come and help set this up with me. So it was a really nice way of going about it, to be completely honest. And then when I did start working for him, I didn't feel reliant on him because I had my own contacts. I felt like I had not a huge reputation, but a good enough reputation to hold my own. And also because I'd been surrounded by my own contacts that I'd built from the ground up, I felt confident going into different work events and work environments with my brother without having to be introduced as his little brother that didn't know anybody. So that for me was really, really important and fundamentally was key to the success we're having now as a business.
How do you, like, so I guess that is the answer, isn't it? Because I was going to ask, how do you know when to take that leap from working part of a 9-to-5 or whatever it may be, working for someone else with the intention of then working for yourself in the future? I guess that is the secret, isn't it? Building that experience, but most importantly, building your name, earning your stripes. So then when the time comes, you can say, right, I'm ready. Would you say that's exactly what it is?
100%. Yeah. One, like, you know, for me, it was that thing of I think any entrepreneur wants more. And I think anyone that takes that leap of faith has to have that self-belief. And I think, you know, my brother was very good to me. You know, I earned a great salary, but ultimately he wouldn't give me shares of his business. And for me, it's going, management and entertainment isn't a 9-to-5. You will not succeed in this business if you just get in at a certain time. This is a 7-day-a-week, 24-hour job. You know, that is this realm. And if you want to be successful and earn money and create a good name for yourself, you have to be seen at events. You have to be prepared to go the extra mile, and you have to work every hour God gives you in the day. So my aspect of it was, I left my brother's agency when I was 28, and it was going, I'm doing, you know, at least 2 all-nighters a week. I'm, you know, working weekends. I'm trying to be seen at as many things as possible. And I felt that I was at the stage where I had outgrown him and his business in the most respectful way possible. But, you know, by the time I left, they had 42 clients, and about 24 of those 42 clients were through my direct signings. Wow. So when I'm looking at it going, there's 12 members of staff, and around 50% of the rosters come through my direct signings. That's sort of when, you know, my confidence was going, well, I'm generating a huge amount of revenue for this business. I'm paid, you know, and I'm rewarded a very fair and good salary. But it's not mine. And I'm putting all these hours in and sacrificing my mental health for something I have no ownership in. And then tragically, I lost one of my closest friends. And that was a real eye-opener for me of, you know, what do I want to achieve? And, you know, what do I want my quality of life to be? And yeah, money's obviously important. But like we said before you started recording, I'm in Wales in a coffee shop now, and I've had to answer to nobody to do this. I've left my staff in the office in London. I've come here and visiting my family for the weekends, and I can travel up on a Thursday, film this on a Friday, and do it from the luxury of a coffee shop and have, you know, lunch here throughout the whole day, and then potentially dinner, and then drive back to my old man's and then enjoy the weekend. And I haven't had to answer to anyone to do this. And that for me was the quality of life that I wanted, that I wasn't necessarily rewarded working for someone else, regardless if they were family or not.
I definitely want to get onto those points there, because I think they're so important for everyone listening as well. And I think they make, from what I've researched, an integral part of your story. But one of the things you mentioned there, and I think, again, it's another integral part, is you said you lost your friend. Do you mind going into that a bit more? Because I think that really does play a big part, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. You know, for me, it was that thing of, as a 28-year-old earning the money I was, you know, it was close to 6 figures. You know, it's a huge salary. You know, I was really fortunate where I could buy my property at 26 years old, because I'd put the graft in at such a young age, and I didn't go to uni. I'd built a really good reputation, but I was comfortable. And for me, that entrepreneurial spirit and sort of questioning what I wanted for myself and my life wasn't really put into play until I lost Joe. Mm. And when Joe passed away, my mental health started to spiral. I was suicidal. You know, I've got, you know, no shame in discussing it. I tried taking my life on 3 occasions. And, you know, for me, it was, I'd had enough. I'd hit burnout. 2020 was the prime and most rife period of COVID, where lockdown was prominent, and, you know, suffering mentally and relying on booze and trying to continue the workload I was, whilst not having the relief of being able to leave my house, was tough. And then when Joe passed away, that's when, you know, I really, really struggled and felt like I hit rock bottom. And for me, it was that thing of going on what we just discussed. What is the meaning of life? What is my quality of life? And what do I want to achieve outside of financial remuneration? And what I wanted was to do things like this, where I wasn't given a 20-day holiday allowance a year and couldn't have any more. I didn't want to be dictated to what meetings I could and couldn't go to. I didn't want to have to answer to what time I would have to show up on that morning Zoom or be in the office. You know, and for me, it was, after Joe passed away, it was one of two things. Either I kill myself and I just end it all now, because I was severely unhappy with my life, or I try and make a positive change and do things that are genuinely going to make my core happy. And with all due respect to my brothers, you know, it wasn't going to be with him. It was that if I do this now, if he's not prepared to give me shares of this company, which him and his business partner refused to do, then it was, I have to take this into my own hands, because if I don't, I will end up not being alive.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know. And then, you know, it was really Joe that gave me that confidence. And there'll never be a silver lining to his death, because there's nothing that I wouldn't give or do to bring him back. But the passing of him really made me go, it's now or never. And it made me realize just how precious time is. And there was loads of occasions that he wanted to do things with me, like go to New York, and he invited me to LA. And I was so self-indulged in work that I declined it. And I said no. And that really affected me. I was going, you know, I want to be in a position where I can afford to do these things. But not only can I afford to do them, I also have the value of time to be able to do them and create these memories. And I look back, and that was the most heartbreaking thing, is I could have had more time and memories with one of my closest friends, but I didn't. And that's where, you know, I decided to hand my notice in, take some time out. I put my mortgage on holiday mortgage, moved in with my dad in Birmingham. And I spent 6 months rebuilding myself and, you know, working on what I wanted my future agency to be and how I'm going to make it work. And most importantly, you know, how I can work on myself and get myself to a point where I'm mentally and physically healthy.
That seems like such a tough thing to go through. So I applaud what you're doing. It seems like you're trying to make a positive out of such a negative. So well done on that. I know it's not an easy thing to do at all. And you've got, is it Joe's Buddy Line as well? Like, you've created something to sort of help continue his legacy. Is that right?
I wish I'd created Joe's Buddy Line. My agency is giving 2% of annual profits to the charity, but that was something created by his family. And it was a charity that wanted to help young people know that there are support and resources out there that are available. So Joe's Buddy Line is still very much in the development stage, but it's a registered charity. You know, Joe worked with Roman Kemp, and Roman was extremely close to Joe. And obviously the documentary around that has really helped, you know, with funding. And Roman's done so many things that haven't been publicized behind the scenes to bring funding into the charity. So the charity, you know, is good. It's not fully up there yet. I just hear bits from Lou, Joe's sister, who I'm become extremely close with, and I go over for dinner with Joe's parents, and they fill me in with what they're doing. But I can't take any credit for that, you know, apart from, you know, giving 2% of annual profits. I have really no involvement. But it's a charity that if I can do things to help raise the profile of it or drive any revenue towards it, I absolutely will, because it's something so close to my heart. And as someone that suffers with mental health and someone that has lost someone that the charity is in honor of, it's something so close to my heart that, you know, I want to be a part of for the rest of my life.
That's an amazing thing to sort of be part of, isn't it? And another amazing thing you've done is actually setting up Matchstick. So let's sort of dive into that a bit deeper, because I think the way you've done it is phenomenal. You started in your bedroom, am I right? And then in just a few months on a sort of a low budget, you got, is it like over 50 sign-ins? Tell us about that, because I think that's such a interesting and amazing thing you've done there.
Yeah, to be honest, when people say it's amazing, it doesn't feel it, because I think like any entrepreneur will tell you, you put so much effort and blood, sweat and tears to getting, you know, your business off the ground. You remember more of the hardships than you will the positives. And for me, I did a post about it the other day when the agency turned one. And, you know, in November 2020, my bank, Barclays, you know, I couldn't pay the interest of £12 off, you know, so they blocked all my cards. So, you know, from leaving my brother's company in August to then not being able to pay the interest off on my loans in November, it was really, really hard. And that for me was the make or break of, you know, if this is going to be successful or not. And, you know, I then launched the agency on the 1st of March, and literally my flat I've never really, since buying my property, I didn't have the time to furnish it. So I was working off some garden furniture that I dragged off my balcony and put in my bedroom. And there's a picture on my Instagram of it. But, you know, I was just working off my pink garden furniture in my bedroom. And it was sort of, you know, when I launched with 26 clients. And they were clients, you know, that, you know, wanted to be managed by me. And like I said, you know, earlier I'd sort of put the foundation in, so I knew my reputation and name with the 10 years I had in the industry was good enough that I knew and was confident enough in my ability that people would come over and join me. But I wasn't expecting 26 people to join by the time of launch. So by the time we did launch on the 1st of March, yeah, we launched with 26 clients, and then that gave me confidence that we're on to a good thing. But launching with that many people and not having any staff was stressful, because that literally was at least three all-nighters a week just to manage the workload, because there's a huge amount of workload people don't see. You know, the amount, every brand campaign or TV or radio or whatever, there's a contract, and that contract is on my shoulders to overview and make sure that I'm happy signing the talent to those terms. Then there's, you know, invoicing, the debt collection, then there's the logistics, making sure the talents, you know, post or show up on time or whatever that is. And then, like, you know, for the more traditional talent, making sure the hair, makeup, styling, taxis, every logistic is arranged and uploaded in the diary, and they know what's going on. So doing that without any staff was bloody hard. And then, you know, yeah, it was exciting, but it was horrific, the workload, because I'm looking at it going, I'm still paying off my debts. I'm needing, you know, to bring revenue in. Revenue was coming in pretty much immediately, which was amazing. But then it was sort of going, it's not enough revenue to sort of bring a you know, staff on. So 2 weeks went by, and then I got investment, and, you know, well, I got investment a few weeks before we launched, but, you know, waiting for funding to actually come in to then go, I can now afford staff, was the hardest part. So then I sort of took the hit 2-3 weeks later, brought my first member of staff on board, and then when he came on board, it was a complete game changer, because it freed up my time, and then we went from 26 clients to 52. And then you're going, this is insane. You know, just the perception of Matchstick and in on an industry level immediately just catapulted to, you know, I have no idea how we did it, but we did. And, you know, we went from being not a small business, because most agencies don't launch with 26 clients, but we went from like a mid-tier agency to a relatively large agency within the space of a few months. And you're going, this is amazing. So, you know, to now have 52 clients in a 12-month period and growing at the rate we are is staggering.
What was you thinking then in those earlier stages? Because obviously, based on everything you said, it sounds like my nightmare, having to deal with people, logistics. Like, there's so much I can't deal with that many moving parts. So what was you thinking back then? Did you always have the vision of what it was going to be and have confidence in sort of the, perhaps like even like your destiny, or were you panicking? Like what was,
I was freaking out. I was panicking. Like it was a blag, you know. I was confident enough in my ability. I'd done this long enough to know that I was a good manager, you know, and I'd managed enough high profile people both online and traditionally to know that I was good enough at my job. But when you're doing it yourself and when you don't have the security of a salary and you're very much reliant on yourself to bring money in, not just for you, but 26 people, and then, you know, a few weeks later, staff, it was tough, you know, and it was I have no idea how I'm going to do this. And it was basically, you know, fake it till you make it. I was pretending my shit was together and it really wasn't. And it was just, you know, when I was speaking to people, it was acting composed, then getting off a call going, I'm so understaffed, I'm so under-resourced. How on earth am I going to do this? But it's the same when you speak to new parents for the first time. They're just like, you know, either financially or with waking up in the middle of the night, like, you just make it work. You know, it's just that thing, you just, you know, it's fight or flight. You just happen to make it work. And we did. And like I say, when Layton came on board as my first staff member, I was just really lucky with who I recruited, and he just had a work ethic that was like myself, and he put a lot of hours into the day, and he stepped up to the plate, and I got really lucky. But I think if I didn't get lucky with him to start off with, we wouldn't have grown as quickly as we had, because if I got someone that was prepared to treat this as a 9-to-5, it would have put too much pressure on me and I would have buckled. And, you know, he really relieved a substantial amount of work from me to then take the agency to the next level.
Well, that was obviously like one part that really helped. And do you think from my research, it seems like you've got a real understanding of the emotional side of the business as well. Do you think that was another key element in your success in the early days? Did people sort of get that vibe off of you, but then also understand as a business the way you deal with the emotional side? Like you said, people suffering with burnout in the industry and stuff like that. Do you think the emotional side was another big element that helped?
Yeah, for sure. Look, I'm not a natural born leader. I'm very good at dealing with people because I've done management long enough and I know no two people are the same and people have different egos and different personalities and different aspirations. So when it comes to managing, I guess, third parties that aren't, you know, staff you're directly paying, I can do that all day long with my eyes closed. Okay. Managing an actual team has something I've never been good at because I'm very results driven. You know, I'm quite hard when I need to be. So when I was setting Matchstick up, it was that thing of, you know, I need that emotional element. And like I say, as I'm not a natural born leader, it was I want to nurture my team and make sure that they feel valued. And that for me was the most important, regardless if it's, you know, from a salary basis, it's that I want to take them for lunch and I want to take them to things regardless if we're paying for it or not. Like we got tickets to Cirque du Soleil at the Royal Albert Hall and we go to the Natural History Museum at Christmas for ice skating. And I took the team to Flight Club in Victoria a few weeks ago. So for me, it's just, I want people to feel valued. And when they need a slap on the wrist, they get it. But ultimately, you know, I want to create one of the largest management companies in the world. And I can't do that by myself. So for me, I want to nurture a team where if they need a slap on the wrist, they get it. But most importantly, they feel valued. They feel an integral member of the team. And because we are so new, like I'm under no illusions where we're at, you know, from a perception perspective, a revenue perspective, we're still a very new business. As much as it sounds impressive, we've got over 52 clients. We're still learning as we go. And as experienced as I am, I need to put more into the team to make sure that they're learning and continuing to evolve and asking questions and pushing boundaries. Because ultimately, no business ever becomes successful off one person. It takes a team of people to do and different ideologies and different perspectives and opinions. And that's something I really encourage from the team is I want to be challenged. I don't want a hierarchy of people, you know, just listening to what I have to say. I want to be challenged. I want to push the way the operations of the business works. And thankfully, you know, as much as I have a slight ego, it's not enough to get in the way of what or hinder what I want the business and the growth to be. And ultimately, I know that's going to come from those different people. So from a team perspective, everyone that joins Matchstick has a voice and I want that to be heard. And I want, you know, them to come to me and go, I'm not sure the way that we manage talent here is good enough or the way we operate here isn't strong enough. And this is what I believe is a suitable way to resolve this. So that's why I feel we've been really lucky, yeah. You know, with our growth is naturally we've brought more on board where we now have 4 full-time staff. And, you know, for me, it's integral that they've, you know, bought into the agency and that they feel that they can grow with the company. This isn't about lining my pocket. This is about trying to create something that we do as a team. And I feel, you know, we've got really lucky with that.
Yeah. So you spoke there about sort of knowing the level that you're at. Well, let's tell people about that level, because like you said, you started off sort of mid-tier, you already had clients and stuff, but the level of clients that you've got now is huge, isn't it? Like, can you talk about some of the clients you have, people from McFly and Made in Chelsea, stuff like that? I think that's a good point to sort of show people where you're at.
Yeah, I think, you know, the caliber of clients is high. And I think, you know, from a reality side, we have, you know, a great roster, but also, you know, I guess more to the point, and which is more impressive, is just how good our social talent is. You know, traditional talent are great, but you know, they need a lot more resource than a social talent. But we have, you know, some of the leading social talent in the world, from the likes of Danae Mercer, who's got 2.4 million and is one of our most followed clients and has pushed the boundaries in body positivity and you know, self-love. You know, she's just absolutely remarkable, to someone like Being Her, who are two deaf twins. And, you know, they've got, I think, 91,000 followers. And even though their following isn't, you know, on a global scale of 2.4 million, they've got this amazing messaging around, you know, disability and how they've been able to utilize their messaging to inspire such a wide audience. So, you know, we've got, you know, the likes of Martine McCutcheon, Binky Felstead, Danny's involved in the company from McFly. So, you know, we've got this, you know, this amazing roster that just seems to be growing on a weekly basis, where I'm really proud of it because it's not just beholden to one niche. You know, we really sort of seem to have a mass appeal to a really big pool of talent.
You mentioned it earlier as well about sort of the mental struggle you was in the early stages of this startup and just before that as well. Am I right in saying, like, I heard you on another podcast say you're one of the clients, like, saved you, or three of the clients. I think it was Danny. I think you mentioned Danny Binky and Vogue, was it? Saved you and helped you out?
Yes. Yeah, so Vogue's not a client, but Vogue was someone that I managed back in 2013. I managed her for 3-4 years and we achieved a lot together. But we just always remained really close friends. And like I said earlier, you know, around the time that I couldn't afford my mortgage, you know, the bank had blocked my debit and credit card, and I was financially not in a good position. So Vogue stepped in and paid off all my debt and was amazing. Wow. She wanted nothing in exchange for that. You know, she just did that as a friend, which was really important.
We sort of mentioned about who you were before. How has this all changed you, and what are some of the things you've experienced and learned on your journey? Because for me, I've only just really entered the real business world. I've got a manifestation journal and I've sort of just been on the edge, just entered in the past few months, and already I'm sort of feeling like imposter syndrome and stuff like that. So have you ever felt any of these emotions, and how have you changed from before the business to now?
But I still suffer imposter syndrome. I think, you know, it's just something where I think I've just turned 30, and I think when you're young and you achieve, you know, success, and I think, you know, when people talk about success, I think you're deemed as arrogant or, you know, wanting certain accolades. That's not the case. You know, my agency is successful. We employ 4 people. We have an office in London. We've just signed, you know, a 2-year lease, and we're looking to recruit 2 more people. At the age of 30, I know that's impressive, but it does feel like imposter syndrome. You know, it's something where the office, just to furnish the office, was £20,000 with everything I wanted to achieve with it. You know, I didn't want just a standard office. I wanted everything, you know, to look and feel impressive. So every day when I walk in, it's this thing of, I can't believe I've got this. And it's sort of, it's like, it doesn't feel like it's mine, if that makes sense. It's a weird sort of out of body experience of, I can't believe what we've achieved, and I can't believe this is my job and this is my company, and that, you know, we're having the level of caliber, the caliber and level of talent we are contacting us to want to be represented by us. And I can't believe that I've got people sending me their CVs wanting to be employed by my company. So I totally sympathize and go through what you do of imposter syndrome. And I think naturally with time, I'll start to own the position I'm in more. At the minute, it's just that thing of, it still feels like I'm slightly blagging it. You know, I know how to manage people, but I've never had to employ a team. I've never had to do tax or VAT return. You know, I've never had staff struggles. If staff have issues and coming to me, you know, we've outgrown our office and now I'm having to look at, you know, looking at a bigger space. So for me, it's just I think it'll take a few more years of appreciating what I've done. At the minute, every day still feels like a struggle. Mm-hmm. But in a good way, not in a way where, you know, I was back in November 2020, but in a way of, you know, I don't really feel like this is mine. I still feel like my ambition is much higher than what it already is. So at our first birthday, you know, everyone was congratulating me, and I didn't really want that. I still have so much more that I want to achieve with this business. And, you know, you and I are young. You know, if this is the height of my career at 30, you know, I wouldn't be happy with that. You know, I've got another, 40 years of work before I retire. So this for me isn't the pinnacle yet. And, you know, I still have so much more that I want from life on a personal level and also on a professional level. So from that aspect, you know, I just want to keep taking risks. I want to keep growing the business and hopefully, you know, we can achieve a lot more.
Before we get into your future plans, last little bit on this then, you mentioned there about people sort of applying for your jobs, applying for jobs at your company. Am I right in saying people that rejected you or people that interviewed you in the past, are actually now applying for jobs. Like, there's like, you know, a what dynamic that, now, isn't there?
Yeah, you know what? It's so weird. So I got rejected in 2013 before I got the job with my brother when I was interning. I was still applying for jobs because obviously no one wants to be an unpaid intern forever. It's you know, it was insane. But I had 16 job interviews in 2013, and the places I was interning at they were offering me jobs, but they weren't. The salary wasn't as high as I wanted to be, and that wasn't important to me, but it just felt a bit degrading. I'd rather have been unpaid and known my position yeah. than being paid but under the value I thought I was worth, if that makes it,
yeah, it does
weird
make, yeah.
Yeah, it's weird, but just in my mindset it made sense. But I got declined for 16 jobs in 2013, and at every major record company. I got interviewed at Rock Nation, 360, Sony, Warner, Universal, loads of management companies, and I just got declined. And that's where that really was the start of my mental health battles of not feeling good enough. And, you know, going, my family are in the industry, I've grown up listening to their stories and knowing how to communicate and handle these different scenarios, and it just felt like no one was prepared to give me an opportunity. And that really affected me. So for years, I had this chip on my shoulder. I had a point to prove. And then when I launched Matchstick, I had two people that declined me for an interview want to be employed by the agency. And I thought it was this amazing 360 of, you know, at the time I had no positions, and I'm not going to hold it against them because they clearly had their rationale to why I wasn't good enough at the time for the position. But confidently, I know that everyone that declined me in 2013 was silly, because I know I'm doing much better now than any of the applicants that were successful over my roles at the time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. It does make sense, yeah. Well, that is amazing, isn't it? Like you said, it's complete 360, and it's amazing turnaround, and it's testament to what you've achieved and what you've created. Last few things then, really quick fire round, yeah, because I know we're running out of time, and I appreciate your time coming on here. First one, what would be your one advice for young people listening, whether it's on the mental health side or the business side? Advice for young people, what would it be?
It's such a hard question. On a mental health side, I would say use your support network.
Yes.
That for me was important. You know, I was very, very lucky where I had people that financially supported me at my lowest, but also mentally supported me, from being able to move in with my dad and put my mortgage on holiday mortgage, to, you know, people just being there when I needed to cry down the phone, and, you know, people that just drove over to my flat to make sure I was safe. So use your support network. That's super key from a mental health perspective. If you feel you don't have a support network, there is absolutely support out there with the likes of Joe's Buddyline and a number of other mental health charities that, you know, will be there at the end of the phone to listen to you and your concerns and what you're going through. From a business perspective, I'd say don't listen to anybody. You know, for me, if you know, I would have listened to people, I wouldn't have set up an agency. And it took a loss of a friend for me to, you know, to actually have the confidence to go out and create this. But back when I was employed, everyone said, you know, it was too much of a risk, especially in a pandemic, and I shouldn't do it, and I should be happy I wasn't furloughed. So from a business perspective, if you're confident enough in your ability, just do it, and don't listen to what people have to say on that front.
I love that. And the second one, why is it called Matchstick? I've heard there's a funny story behind the name, is that right?
Yeah, well, at my lowest, when I was really, really mentally unwell, I had my hair was long, it was down here, and I shaved it all off, literally just went completely skinhead. And I went over to Danny Jones's house from McFly, who's a friend of mine, and he was just like, look at the state of you, like a matchstick. And then that sort of like created this thing of going, oh my God, that's such a good name for a potential management company, because like the connotations behind it are, you know, you lie to career, but then you match with talent, you stick with talent. But it all stemmed off the fact that I was unwell. And around the time of me having these suicidal thoughts, I just literally shaved my head off. And then Danny was just like, you know, you need to come over for lunch. You know, you can't be at the flat by yourself. And then just this flippant comment of him sort of taking the piss out of me just then ignited the name of the company.
That's incredible. That is, I like
yeah, that. Yes, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Last few quickfire ones. And what is your favorite brand out there at the moment? Obviously, apart from your brand, are there any brands that catch your eye?
Gymshark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gymshark have just another level. You know, you look at their growth. I think what we've achieved in a year is phenomenal, but they're less than 10 years old and they're valued at $1 billion. You know, and you look at that, and also, you know, I'm a big Villa fan, and the owners are yeah. Aston Villa fan. But I think for a Birmingham-based business to be competing on a global scale with the likes of Nike and Adidas and have such a young founder is staggering. It's absolutely phenomenal. So I'd say from a positioning perspective and a brand perspective, Gymshark are at the forefront, a market leader in the business world for me.
Yeah, and I don't think he gets the credit he necessarily deserves as well, because like you said, for such a young person to be battling all those people, he's doing the crazy things. Next one, what's your favourite celebrity or influencer?
Oh. You know what? I wouldn't say I have a favourite. I think, you know, unless you know someone's story, it's really hard to gauge. I think on a front facing value, because I'm a fan of his, Calvin Harris, I think's great. I love the fact he grows his own fruit and vegetables. Wow. You know, I love his music. I love that, you know, a Scots lad got his best mate to manage him, who then created a management company 360. So I think Calvin Harris, in terms of an overall perspective of how he appointed his manager to what he's gone on to achieve, you know, I think, you know, he's amazing. But it's a really hard question, that.
Yeah, it is. Last one. What is one thing you're proud of, whether it's on a personal level or for the brand or something you've achieved in life? What's one thing you're proud of?
I think being able to give 2%. I know it's not a huge sum of money, but if every management agency or every business said they're going to give 2% of their annual profits to charities, the world would be a much better place. So I think giving 2% of our profits to Joe's Buddy Line is something where, for me, you know, that for me, because of everything that I've been through and losing Joe, and, you know, is something that nothing will compare to that. And that's something that we're committed to for the rest of our life running this agency. So that for me, hands down, is something I'm most proud of.
I love that. I really like that. What is one thing you wish you knew at an earlier stage in your life or your career as a business person?
I wish I would have taken the plunge and set up my own business earlier. Mm. I think, you know, with mental health struggles, there is that element of self-doubt all the time. And I think I wish I would have set this up when I was 25, 26, because if I would have done that, I would have got Joe involved, and I would have hoped he would have accepted being my business partner, and we could have done this together. I think there's always that thing of age in society, such a big thing, whether it's what time you get married or what time you have kids or what time you settle down or buy a property or whatever. I think, you know, your 20s are the years you're allowed to take risks. And one thing that I wish I would have known when I was younger is I would have rather have taken the risk then than I did when I did, because, you know, no one wants to set up a business in a pandemic when you're in debt and everything's against you. So my thing was, especially if someone's listening to this and they are in their 20s and they have these aspirations, take the risk. You know, if you're confident enough, your ability, and you're not deluded, if it fails, you're going to get a job somewhere else. So, you know, take the risk, believe in yourself, and you know, just put all hours, you know, you have in the day into making it succeed.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on. It's been really interesting to hear your story as well. Final thing, what's next for you and the brand? And tied in with that, what do you want your legacy to be?
I'm not going to leave a legacy. You know, Max Parker just wants to work hard and continue to do what he's doing. Matchstick, I don't know. You know, we've had offers for investment, which I've declined. I just want to make this company as big as I can. And if I can look back in 5 years' time, or even when I retire, and just go, there is nothing I did that was detrimental to this business, and every decision I've made has helped benefit the staff, the talent, or the company itself, I'm a proud man. So from that side, that's all I can wish for. You know, like I say, personally, there's no legacy I personally want to leave. It's just building this agency to the highest heights that I can. And if I can leave that to someone else when I retire to then take on and run, then happy days. But really, that's it. I just want to create the future of management and hopefully be doing this in 30, 40 years.
Amazing. And last thing, where can people find out more about you? And if you've got a final few words as well, that would be great.
Just www.matchstickgroup.co. You know, there's nothing really on me, but you know, if you want to know more about the agency, or you're looking for work, or you're a talent looking to be managed, by all means, please get in touch. And I'm always here to be here. I'm always keen to hear people's stories. That's everything for me. And I think anyone that's listening, you know, like I said, just have the belief to do it. For years, I doubted myself. And, you know, looking at what I've done in the past 12 months, I wish I would have done this much, much sooner.
Yeah. Well, brilliant. Like I said, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate your time as well. So thank you so much. And yeah, I look forward to seeing how you develop as well, both as a person, as a brand.
Yeah, amazing. Thanks so much. I really appreciate you having me on.